Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, and welcome to another episode of Beyond the Cover with tonight's special guest, none other than New York Times bestselling author Allison Brennan. So, Jeff, how you doing tonight?
Feeling much better. Sorry I missed the last episode.
That's right. And, you know, and then we were supposed to be on last week. I was out of town. My wife and I went to Las Vegas for our 21st wedding anniversary. And so we kind of did a couple little days there and saw Boys to Men. That was interesting. They're very good. If you ever have a chance to go, I suggest you go because they are very good. So it was well worth the trip.
Oh, great. Yep. And happy anniversary. A little late, but yeah.
And thank you very much. So we're honored to be able to be joined here with Allison Brennan, and her latest book goes on sale tomorrow. It's called Poisonous. It is the next in her Maxine Revere series. So let's bring Allison on right now. So, Allison, thanks so much for coming on. How are you doing?
Hey, I'm great. Thanks for having me again. It's been a couple years.
It has, and it's great to have you back on. And we're talking here about, you know, your latest book, not Lucy Kincaid, but we're into your next series here with Max Revere, Poisonous. The latest book comes out tomorrow. So the East Coast people will have it in, what, an hour and a half. On Amazon, I guess, if they got the ebook and then they're going to get it like right at midnight. I'm not really sure how that works, but we'll say it's midnight. But how are you doing?
I'm great. Yeah, I actually have a lot of stuff to do this week. Usually I don't get sent anywhere, but this week I'm going to Florida tomorrow to speak to a library event thing. So
a library event
at home.
Cool.
Yeah.
Nice.
It's like, I don't know how to bill it. It's basically they bring in a writer every week for a month or so, and so I got picked, and so I'm really excited. It'll be a lot of fun.
Well, let's jump into Poisonous here, and let's hear it from you. What do you got going on in your next Maxine Revere book?
Well, I am really bad at pitching my own books, but I'll say this. You have kids, and so you – and as we were just talking earlier, we're about the same age.
Yeah.
When I was in high school, I did a lot of really stupid things. And fortunately, there was no social media to basically immortalize all of the stupid things that I did. And I will not admit to anything now because there's no evidence. But I realized, you know, because I have five kids, that my kids can't make the same mistakes I make. They do something stupid, if it gets posted online, it's there forever. And it can impact them in their jobs, in their school, among their friends. So that was part of what I had been thinking about for a long time as I try to navigate social media. I try to be on everything so I can follow my kids. Then the other thing was, last year, a junior high school student committed suicide because he was being bullied online. And nobody really knew about it. His parents really didn't know. They kind of knew because he was upset about stuff, but they didn't know the extent of it. And it really upset me because I'm thinking, you know, how can other kids be so cruel that they would, you know, when we were younger, kids were bullied, you know, kind of push each other on the playground. It would be sort of us versus them or whatever. It never really escalated into something that was so depressing that you would consider taking your life. I mean, at least I hope not. Not to the degree that this poor kid was being bullied. And so I kind of took those two concepts and merged it into Poisonous, where I have a cyberbully, Ivy Lake, who basically made it her life's mission to find out the dirt on everybody in her school and post it online. And in doing so, she gained a lot of followers and a lot of quote-unquote friends who were, like, just eager to find out, ooh, who's Ivy going to talk about next? So she kind of had this false sense of popularity. Well, at the beginning of the book, she's dead. And obviously there are a lot of suspects, but there's a lot of stuff going on that the police don't have a lot of evidence. It could have been an accident. And because there were so many suspects and really no solid evidence, it became a cold case. And so in walks Max Revere, and she's, you know, that's what her specialty is solving the cold cases.
Well, I have to ask, since you have a family and you're essentially writing a novel with that age group, how difficult was it to write about that age group and something that is ultimately a pretty horrible thing to talk about?
It actually wasn't too difficult, and I think because I have kids and I talk to them a lot and I watch TV with them, so I know what they are interested in. I follow all of them on social media, so I know what they post. I'm sure, you know, if they wanted to, they could probably have a secret account that I wouldn't know about, but fortunately my kids are pretty, I'm blunt with my kids, and so they're pretty blunt with me about stuff. So I kind of know that world. And a lot of their friends follow me too, so I get to, like, basically lurk and see what their friends are all saying. And I never comment because I don't want them to think here I am, you know, this mom saying, oh, you shouldn't say that. But I try to keep in tune so that if anything ever gets really out of control, I mean, I'm not going to go nail them for swearing online or something, but if I ever saw anything get really out of control, I would probably maybe talk to them if I knew them really well. But it, for me, I guess I've always wanted to write a YA thriller, and this was probably the closest I've gotten to it because I did have a major teenage secondary character that I could get into his head and see what he thought and what he did. And so I actually really enjoyed it, and I want to write more with teenage protagonists, whether or not it's in my Max series or in another series. I have a lot of fun with it.
That's great.
Now, when you're thinking, of course, now in the news, there's a lot of bullying and a lot of things that go on. You know, you hear the sides of, you know, people, a lot of celebrities getting involved with it, but social media is still, you know, it's still hounded and hounded and hounded, and these things are just, and they're terrible about what goes on and how these kids act. I mean, you know, they act a lot worse, I think, now than they ever had, because you could do it more anonymously, and it's a lot easier to write an email than it is to talk to somebody face-to-face. So knowing how we were as children, and then you kind of knowing how things are today, how difficult, I guess you want to say, was it when you're writing from that point of view, because knowing how it was in the past and now and how it is now, was that a difficult thing for you to kind of get yourself involved in?
At first it was, and actually I talked to my three middle children who are now 20, almost 15 and 13, and a girl, boy, girl, and I talked to them about what they see online, especially my college girl, because she's obviously been on the internet a lot longer than my other two, and, you know, what she's seen and what she does if she sees something. So I kind of picked their brains a little bit just to find out how they view things. And my son, actually, ironically, he lurks. He has all these accounts, but he doesn't really participate in much of anything. For him, it's all about, you know, the Xbox and talking to people, you know, on his headset and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, so with, I think just finding out how they communicate, I watch what they post. Like, my daughter will never post anything that is grammatically incorrect.
I love it.
She can't stand it if there's, like, a punctuation error in something she posts online. And she's an English major, English art double major. So it's like she can't stand it. Or my son, capital letters, what are those? That means I have to press an extra button, you know?
Uh-huh.
A means okay. Why should I type four letters when I could just type one? So I kind of picked their brains, and I followed them, and I tried to get into their voice, in a way, the voice of teenagers, so that when I was writing about it. But it is definitely different than when we were kids. I have said things I've regretted, especially when I was younger, and I realized if I had ever had the internet and posted anything like that, it would have hurt far more people. I mean, when you're 16 and you think you know everything and you really don't, you could say things that could actually come back to haunt you that you totally regret, and then you find yourself backtracking and losing friends. It happened to my oldest daughter. She's 22. She's in the fire academy right now, where she said something. Fortunately, it wasn't online, but she said something to a friend, and it was just an off-the-cuff comment, and it ruined a friendship. And if you post like that online, I think it happens more often than not.
You know, and that was going to be like my follow-up was, when you're out there and you're seeing, you know, things that are posted, because, you know, you're checking out, you know, your children's pages and you're seeing, but you're seeing what other people type. Do you then go to them and do you talk with them and do you say, hey, you know what, these are breeding grounds for what these people are doing? And do you say, you know, do you talk to the person that they're doing against to try to maybe help them through? Or, you know, how did those conversations kind of go? And were any of those kinds of conversations that, if they do go like that, did they wind up in the book that you were, did they wind up in the book in any kind of way, in a story way?
Nothing that I personally witnessed ended up in the book or that I was personally involved with. And I haven't gotten involved with hardly any. The only thing I've gotten involved with was when there was some inappropriate jokes being shared around, actually text messages, when I used to monitor my kids' text messages, because I pay for
the phone. Damn, Mom, give them some privacy.
I pay for the phone. If they want to pay for their own phone, oh, wait, they don't have a job.
That's
yeah,
true. That damn J-O-B thing always gets in the way, doesn't it?
No, I mean, I don't stalk them. I just, you know, every once in a while, I had a friend of mine who was a cop, retired cop, that he would basically toss his kids' rooms randomly searching for drugs and paraphernalia. He said, they live in my house, I'm going to toss the room. And by the way, this family is the most close-knit family I know, and they love each other to death. But he was a tough dad. But you know what? He raised a Marine. He raised a girl who basically is the manager of a restaurant. He's raised some great kids. And, you know, hey, you do what you have to do. But anyway, so I haven't really been involved with stuff. But I did there was something that went around, and it wasn't one of my kids, where a sexually explicit video was posted online, and we all know all the celebrities, you know, they get their videos or their pictures shown, and oh, whoops, we got hacked. But when it's a young person, it has a far greater impact, I think, on that young person than when it's an adult or a celebrity or something. That girl, and I cannot remember her name for the life of me, the reporter, the sports reporter, who had her privacy violated when somebody reported
her.
Erin Andrews.
That story, that really bugs me, because you'd have an expectation of privacy and people are thinking, oh, well, you know what? She got all this benefit from it. I'm sorry, but it doesn't matter how gorgeous you are or what kind of career you have. You do have an expectation of privacy. To have that out there that you know everybody has seen, it's going to affect her for years to come. And I feel for her. And so it's things like that I've been kind of just cultivating in my head. So when Ivy, my dead girl, does these things, I think, why does she do them? Well, she does them for popularity, because that's really what most teenagers want, is acceptance. They want acceptance. They want friends. They want to feel like they belong. And this is how she feels like she belongs. And she didn't have parents who searched her computer or read her text messages or figured out what she was doing. And even if they did, they didn't care, actually. I'll just say that, because they didn't in the book. She could do no wrong. These are just kids being kids. And I think to a certain degree that is true. I think whenever you cry bullying, I think half the time it's, you know what, let the kids resolve their own conflicts. It's when it gets to be personal, like when you're posting inappropriate things online or hitting, or, you know, when it gets to be really personal, then have adult involvement. But I think sometimes we're not teaching our kids how to deal with this stuff because we're trying to coddle them, in my opinion.
Hypothetically, since we're talking about privacy, it seems like our society is becoming more and more, everything is out there. There is no privacy anymore. What do you see happening in, let's say, even 3 years? Do you think it's going to get worse? Do you think it's going to get better?
Oh, that's a hard question.
Sorry,
it's a good question.
Again, when we bring guests on, we never once say the questions will be easy. We just say they'll be fun.
I think it's going to actually get harder before it gets easier, or worse before it gets better. And I think what's going to happen is, I have a big problem with censorship. which I think most writers do. So I have on the one hand, I say, okay, we need to have a free internet where people can post what they want and say what they want and not be censored, even if they're stupid idiots. I mean, stupid idiots have every right to say what they think, because that we live in a free country. It's what makes America great, honestly, is our free speech. So when you start to limit that, then you're starting to get into, okay, well, what's going to be acceptable and who's going to make those decisions? So I think the internet is still in that phase where we're going to have a lot of really bad stuff out there, and it's going to have to kind of be self-regulating. And I don't know necessarily how to do that. I'm a civil libertarian, so it's like I have – anytime anybody wants to take away something, I'm like going, ah, the government wants to take away something. No. But I get – I don't know. It's really kind of a gray area for me, and I can argue both sides. I did take debate in high school for years, and I could probably argue both sides of the issue, but I guess I go down to the Orwellian theory that as soon as you start limiting things and as soon as you start restricting things, then – who's going to make those decisions of what's going to be limited and what's going to be restricted. So I think what's going to need to happen, honestly, parents need to stay involved. And I think too often parents are part of the problem. They post inappropriate things. They call people names, and their kids follow that behavior. And but that's always happened. But now it happens in a bigger forum. You know, if you have a parent who's a racist, you're probably going to raise racist kids. If you have a parent who doesn't know how to shut their mouth on the internet, you're going to have kids that don't know how to shut their mouths on the internet. And I think that's it's just because it's instantaneous information.
Yeah.
My mom likes caps lock key, so.
I want to remind everybody here that we are speaking with best-selling author Alison Brennan. You can go to alisonbrennan.com for more information on all her work, including the book, which comes out tomorrow, April the 12th. So if you're listening to this live, it comes out tomorrow. If you're listening to this tomorrow, the book's already out, so go get it. It's called Poisonous. It is book three in her latest Maxine Revere series. So I'm kind of touched on something earlier where you said that you enjoy writing. And then this is not really a YA, but it does involve teenage children, and it's kind of, I guess, half YA, half not, but you said you would like to kind of get in that realm. So is there possibly a character in the book Poisonous that you can see maybe jumping out that you'd like to explore more? Have you heard some early reviews from fans maybe saying that they would like to see a certain character? Was there one that you enjoyed writing a little bit more that, you know, you would maybe like to explore?
I do love the characters in this book, but I told their story. Austin is a 13-year-old eighth grader, and I really liked him. And, you know, I could probably find stories for him down the road, but I'm not planning on writing stories about these characters, other than Max, of course, and her world. But I have been thinking a lot about not necessarily writing a YA, but I want to explore relationships in families a little bit more. And then this book really inspired me to do it, the good and the bad, you know, the good family relationships and bad family relationships. And kind of beyond, not, I don't want to say beyond crime fiction, because that's, I'm always going to write crime fiction. It's in my blood. But to kind of deal more with parental relationships with their kids. I have an idea of, you know, of a father and a daughter. I never knew my dad until I was 18. Big, long story. But I never met him until I was 18. And I, you know, I think I can write a really effective teenager who meets a parent for the first time or who gets involved with maybe something and has to be bailed out. I mean, it would be a lot of fun. My mom always tells a story, and I'm going to tell it because my kids keep repeating it, and I just want to shoot my mother sometimes. I love her to pieces. But apparently, when I was 5 years old, I went up to, mind you, this was in the 1970s, and kids that were 5 years old did not have to be chaperoned all the time. I was walking from the movie theater to my grandma's house by myself when I was five during summer, and I asked somebody for 25 cents because I wanted a candy bar, and he called the cops on me.
What?
And I'm waiting to use that in a book. But I'm probably going to use it in a much more violent way.
Oh, my God. That is hilarious. You pulled the little,
I know.
Can I have money for candy?
But you know what's even worse? My mom was
gave
a dispatcher for the police department.
So she heard about this 5-year-old girl that the cops.
And
why would you call the cops a 5-year-old? I mean, that's the first thing. What kind of asshole calls the cops at a 5-year-old, ask him for a quarter for a freaking candy bar?
Because they did cost a quarter back then. It was 1974, and my mother.
No, but just give him the quarter and then say, "Here's the quarter. Have fun, little girl." I mean, what was he calling the cops for? Was he? Did he think you were gonna like rob him or something? I don't. What a moron!
Well, I know why. He was the big bad wolf because she was going to grandma's house, right?
There you go. I have little piggy tails. I was so cute when I was 5.
Oh my Lord.
Anyway, but I would say there's so many different stories that I can draw on of things that have happened either to me or to people I know or just life in general. I mean, everything I do I make up, but it's all based on relationships. And so I would love to write more young adults or more kids. I used to work at the rec center. I volunteered because I got community service credit because of course I was a teenager that wanted to go to college, so community service really, really mattered. And I used to do...
No, hold on, real quick. Was this community service because you're still serving it from a 5-year-old, or was this voluntarily?
No, this was volunteer. This was
community service. Oh, okay, I'm just checking. I didn't know how long that sentence lasts. I mean, that's, you know, 5-year-old asking for a quarter, that's some long shit in the jail right now. That could be that much of a third strike, you're out.
No, I worked with some emotionally disturbed kids, not actually mentally retarded kids, but emotionally disturbed, where they were really, I mean, severely autistic or severely handicapped. And I actually really like exploring that and how it affects families, good and bad. And I have all these ideas. I'm just rambling now. I'm sorry.
You're fine.
No, that's
yet
great.
I have to write them all.
Yeah. But you know what you know what people will notice when you are doing this and you're rambling, and I'm just going to tell people right now, you'll never hear us ask how you get your ideas. You know why? Because you don't know. They can come from any direction, any time, anywhere, any place. So wherever you get your inspiration, if you can't find it with yourself, listening to somebody else saying how they get their inspiration is not going to give you an idea on how they write a book. That's just not going to happen. That's why I never ask the question. I really do not care where your inspiration come from, because it's not going to help me understand the book any better.
Well,
I have to say that. Go ahead, Jeff. You can ask the question now.
Well, one of the things, Allison, we argue on this show about is writing series versus standalones. For yourself personally, why do you like writing series characters as opposed to writing standalone stories?
Well,
He does this just to get a rise out of me. You know it. I'm just saying. But go ahead. Here we go.
Well, I'll ask an easy one next. Where do you get your ideas? No, I'm kidding.
First of all, I would love to write a standalone, and I actually have a couple standalone ideas, and I plan on writing one. The reason I wrote a series, well, first of all, I started by writing trilogies. Because when I sold to Ballantine, I actually wrote a standalone. My first book was a total standalone. They bought it and said, "We want you to make this into a trilogy. Can you take this character and don't kill him and make him the hero of your next book?" Because he was dead in the first draft. So I said, okay, he doesn't really have to die. I have a high body count anyway. So I saved him. And, you know, I resurrected him in the draft, in the second draft, and ended up writing a trilogy about three women who had gone through the FBI Academy together, and each book was about different one. But they
was
all
that the Prey, the Hunt, and the Kill?
Them. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Prey, the Hunt, and the Kill, yeah.
And so they all stand alone because I conceived the ideas. The second book was already written before I sold the first book. So I kind of just connected them very loosely. Then the next trilogy was about focused around a family, but each book stood alone. So I think I try to write my series in such a way that you can start almost anywhere. There's some books that aren't good starting points, but Poisonous stands alone. You could read that and not have read the other two books and still get 99% of Max's story. But the reason why I write a series is, honestly, publishers like series. When a series takes off, like I'm writing the 12th book in the Lucy Kincaid series, the sales stay there, and they're hopefully going to continue to grow. Publishers like that. It's a known quantity. They know they're going to sell X number of copies because they have a series that has X number of fans. The problem with that is when you get into the higher counts, like 12 books, is people say, oh, I don't want to start another series because this one has 12 books and I don't really want to read all 12 of those books. So it's kind of, it's good in the sense that when you get a series that you love to write, that you can continue writing it and have a great fan base like Jack Reacher. I mean, I didn't start in the beginning of his series. I started someplace in the middle, and I still love the books.
Don't get me started on that. Keep going. I'm biting my tongue. Go ahead.
But the problem is that when you're writing a series, you don't want to get bored, and that's my biggest thing. The reason
right.
I started writing Max is because I didn't want to get bored with Lucy. Because if I get bored, then it's going to show on the page. And so
right.
now being able to write both of them actually helps me keep both of the series really fresh, but I still plan on writing a standalone. And I really, really, really want to. They're just really hard to sell, I think.
And I get that. And if you ever want to write a standalone, no one will buy it. You know who to come to because I'll publish it sight unseen.
And I'll read it. There you go.
And you know why? And the reason why I say that is because I already know you as a person, and we've known you for about, what, 5 or 6 years now? And if anybody knows Allison, they'll know that you put 150% of your emotion and everything onto the page, and you're not going to do anything half-assed. So when you get something, you're going to know. Now, whether or not you like the topic or whatnot, you know that this was done 150% from you, and you put everything you had into it. You didn't just throw something out there like some authors do to just sell a book and to collect a paycheck. And that I like, and that I like about you. And that's the reason why I said I'll publish anything you have sight unseen, because I already know. I don't have to worry about it. You know, so
well,
that's why
you,
I say
man.
That. And that's why people should go and make sure that if they're not familiar with Lucy Kincaid or Max Revere or some of your earlier romantic thrillers, or the, you know, the mystery series you're writing now with Laura Griffin and things, they should pick them up and find out, because you're going to notice, and with an author like yourself, it's tough to say, pick up this book because this is where you'll find out who Allison Brennan is. And some authors have those kind of books. You know, even Stephen King kind of has those kind of books. Like if you read It or Christine or Cujo and stuff like that, you're going to get an idea who he is. But with you, you pick it up and you just know that you're going to get everything that you got, and there it is. That's what I got to say.
Well,
and they're great
thank
books,
you.
Too.
Yeah, yeah. So.
Well, thanks. I love writing.
Yeah.
I mean,
and I can't believe I just said that to a freaking Giants fan, but I love you anyway.
You know, and I love you, John, even though you're a Dodgers fan. So
I know. That's what makes
good.
It work. That's what makes it work, you know. We're all in this together.
Go Giants.
We just love
go
baseball.
Giants.
Yeah. Oh, now he's like, go Giants. Yeah, okay, Mariners. Oh, it's tied 1-1. What do you know? So, all right. Well, I'll tell you, Allison, we want to thank you for coming on. It's been fabulous. We got to have you back on because we still got a ton of questions that we could get involved in here. And so we'd love to have you back on. Whenever you have time, if you ever have any, you know, extra time just hanging around, not doing much with 5 kids and, you know, 38 books and whatever else you got going on, hey, drop us a line and
hey,
we'll have you back on
here,
whenever.
We will go to a Giants game.
I'm telling
you,
whenever I get up there, we're going to have to go. I got to see that park. I've only peed on the outside of it. I've never actually been inside. So I got to get inside
park.
To see a game.
It's
yeah.
no safe
I know
though, it's but
it's
a great park.
Looking. I know it's gorgeous looking.
It's a beautiful park.
I got to hit it. So thank you so
well,
much,
thank
Allison.
You, both for having
you have a great one. And good luck tomorrow. The book comes out. It's called Poisonous. And so have fun in Florida. Be safe and enjoy your enjoy your reading at the library thing.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much. Bye, Jeff.
All right. All right.
Take care. Thanks again.
Bye.
Bye-bye. So, again, everybody, that is author Allison Brennan, and the book is called Poisonous. It is the next book in her Max Revere series. It is out April the 12th. So if you're listening to this after April the 12th, go to Amazon, pick it up, hardcover, ebook, audio, however you want it. It's there. You got it. You got your choice, and you got no problem. I don't think we really need to take a break, Jeff. I mean, we're just rolling right along here, so there's no point in, like, stopping and going. We know what we're going to do for the next kind of half hour. I was going to try to load up that Steve Barry interview that I did, but I think we're going to play that next week on the second half. Give a little teaser for the people who's coming on next week, because it's a very exciting guest that we have coming on. It's not an author, but it's very much in the realm of authors and people that want to kind of have the inside scoop. Who do we got coming up next week?
Well, we talk about the world of publishing, and we actually have a literary agent coming on next week. And she
so
can give
we're
going to
get
great
that inside scoop. Yeah, that's going to be the great, because, you know, how many people, you know, you're at Thriller Fest, you hear the people at the Pitch Fest, and they all want this, like, magic bean formula. Like, they're going to find Jack and outside, and they're going to get the magic beans on exactly how to pitch to an agent, what they're looking for, how to get their book sold. Well, now we're going to have an idea. You know, maybe some of those questions will be answered. And maybe you'll have more questions after she answers questions. You just never know. But I think that's
well,
great
that's,
to be able to have that, you know, that whole
when
spectrum.
When I talked
of,
to her, that's what I told her we wanted to talk about. And she's all ready and raring to go. So it'll be fun.
Yeah, so that's going to be entertaining. But let's get into some of the books you have now. You got a couple books that you wanted to kind of talk about. So I'm going to leave it up to you now. What you got?
Well, one of them is by a guy, I don't know if you've heard of him. His name is Doug Lyle.
Doug Lyle. Rings a bell.
Yeah.
Oh, the Carbon Science Radio guy here on the Suspense Radio Network every other Saturday with Jan Book. I have heard of him, yes.
Yes, I figured you might have. His new book, and it's coming out. I'm looking at the dates here. Hang on.
I think it's June.
It is coming out in July, so
it's
a ways away.
Yeah,
it's called Deep Six.
Yeah.
And it's a really great PI mystery. It's very funny, and it deals with a ex-professional baseball player, so it really ties into your discussion earlier with Allison. And it's just a lot of fun, and it reminded me a lot of those really old classic PI novels, which I enjoyed, you know, growing up. He's got a really nice formula here, and I hope this isn't just a one and out with this character. Though I know you love your
series. I'll give you inside information on that. He's already writing the sequel.
There we go. It'd be great. I look forward to it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's already writing the sequel. I talked to him on the phone not too long ago, and he was outside, and he said, "I'm outside, and I'm writing the sequel to Deep Six, and I'm just relaxing in the nice weather." I'm like, okay.
Nice. And to celebrate the 50th anniversary of the greatest franchise ever, this book comes out
next
month.
There we go.
And it is called What Would Captain Kirk Do? Intergalactic Vision from the Captain of the USS Enterprise.
Well, now, wait a second. You just screwed it up because you just said from the greatest series of all time. I thought you were going to talk about another Star Wars book.
No. Yeah, see, no. You're the one that's screwing it up.
And this is going to tie into one of our shows coming up where we are going to actually have authors from the Star Trek and the Star Wars side, and we're going to pit them together, and we're going to see who walks out on top.
Exactly. Yes, so this is just a lot of fun little snippets and photos from various episodes, and it's a nice way to spend a few minutes just kind of reminiscing about how awesome Star Trek is. So Trekkies will get a kick out of this book.
Well, I got a question for you. Do you like to be scared?
Yeah.
Do you like to kind of feel a little uneasy when you're reading a book, like you kind of got a little uneasy feeling when you're reading a book? Not because it's bad, just because you just have, like, an uneasy feeling.
Oh, I thought you were going to say something about coming over to my house for dinner, but...
oh, yeah.
No, I do like that feeling, actually.
Well, have you heard of an author, and she's fabulous. She's from the UK. Her name is Alex Marwood. She's
what's
an outstanding... And I won't really say she's a horror writer, because it's not really horror. It just gives you that uneasy feeling. And there's a book I'm reading about her from her now. It's her latest one. It comes out in August. And I want to read it early because I'm trying to get a good review in if it's good enough. And, you know, maybe get on the cover, you know, get some little things, you know how we like to do that. And it's called The Darkest Secret. And her last book that came out, The Killer Next Door, which came out in 2014, was sensational. I mean, even Stephen King sat there and said, this scared the hell out of me. So if you like those kinds of books, and again, it's not like it's horror. It's the matter of just, it just gives you that, just, you know what I mean by like that uneasy feeling? You know it when you read books and you read so many, you just kind of get it. You're like, that's just kind of creepy. That's what you get with Alex. That's what she is. So.
Oh, I like those. And if it's unpredictable, it makes me better.
And so far it is. Yeah. And it's funny because this book starts out, I've never seen a book start out like this. It actually starts out after the crime had taken place, and it's witness statements. So it's like, here's what the witness said about what happened. And it's like five witness statements at the beginning about what happened, and then you're going to see what goes on. So I was like, well, that's kind of interesting because you kind of see the different perspective of how they thought and said things happened, but they still never really know what goes on. It's like, well, I saw this, but I don't really understand. I don't really know what happened. You know what I mean? So it's like one of those kind of things. And I was like, that's kind of a fascinating way to start out a book. So I was already kind of enthralled when she did it that way. I thought that was kind of cool.
It does sound neat.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll have to see if I have it in my pile. I'll move it to the top of the pile.
Yeah, Alex Marwood, called The Darkest Secret. Check that out. And if anybody,
cool.
Like I said, she's had two books before. It's called The Killer Next Door, and another one is called The Wicked Girls, which came out in 2013. She's from the U.K., but it's not really U.K. writing, so you won't have to worry about that. But go to Amazon, check her out. If you like it, get it, you know. $9.99 for the Kindle, so you can check it out and see what you think. You know, I just think, like,
did she win an Edgar?
I think she did. I think she did for The Wicked Girls.
Okay, cool.
I'm sorry, I'm looking at the cover of her book, and there was an award on the cover of it. I'm on Amazon right now, and I'm looking. Yes, it was an Edgar Award winner, The Wicked Girls. So
cool.
There you go.
Okay.
Yeah, and it says psychological thriller, so that's what I said. It's not horror, but it's dark, and it gives you that thing. So now, we always like to kind of talk about a topic, and Jeff and I were kind of thinking, and so I said, you know what? I have an idea. And it kind of hit, and I kind of did a letter from the editor, too, and then I said, but we're going to expand on this a little further. What was your first thought? First, let's start this. What was your first thought, Jeff, when you saw that they were going to have another Indiana Jones and Harrison Ford was going to star in it?
I thought it was a typo. I honestly did, because I thought, there's no way. You know, he's going to be screaming at kids to get off his lawn.
Right. And I'm sitting there thinking, why would they want to do this? And then I start thinking and I look back and I'm like, you know, it kind of lends to the same thing of, when is enough just enough? When is it you're going to bring out a movie? And I have a feeling you're bringing out this movie for one thing and one thing only. The studio is paying you a shitload of money to do it. They're going to pay Spielberg a shitload of money to do it, and they're trying to cash in on a paycheck and maybe right the wrong that people think they did with The Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, which I just watched again, and it's really not that bad of a movie. You know, I mean, I understand the whole premise of he, you know, gets through the nuclear explosion by getting into a refrigerator, and then he gets blown out, and people were all worked up over that. But when you look back at Raiders of the Lost Ark, there was a lot of things in there that was like, you know, how does he survive those types of things? Temple of Doom, you know, the guy's pulling a heart out of a guy's chest, and it closes back up, and he looks at it, and then it burns. I mean, the Last Crusade, There was a lot of those kinds of moments in all the movies. You've kind of had those moments, so I didn't think it was out of bounds of what they did. I didn't think Shia LaBeouf's character was that good, but, you know, that's beside the point. But I didn't think it was
well,
that bad.
Honestly, when you're watching those films, you get so caught up in the thrill ride of it that you don't really think about all the, yeah, they couldn't do that in a million years type thing. But when
right.
I was watching Crystal Skull, there were so many times I went, no, no, that wouldn't happen. Especially when Shia LaBeouf is swinging on vines like Tarzan and keeping up with the moving Jeep. You know, like,
well, now,
what?
Now, okay. And so that was the other thing. And so, but when I was watching some of the other movies, and I'm sitting there and I'm watching those things, and I'm like, okay, he, you know, he breaks a bridge in the middle, and he just, he goes against a cliff, but he's perfectly fine. You know, doesn't get knocked out, nothing happens. You know, he just, you know, everything's fine. You know, he has bugs, everything crawling on him, but he never gets bit by anything, you know, with scorpions, everything else. And I'm like, really? Come on. But I think the reason why Temple of Doom and Crystal Skull were not that great that people thought were not that great was because they were going after things people didn't understand. Everybody knows the Ark. Everybody knows the Holy Grail. So it was a matter of we know these items, and they're fascinating because people are always trying to find them. And now Harrison, now you know Indiana Jones is going to find them. No one really understands the Crystal Skull. And, of course, the Shakara stones were all made up, so no one understood that. So I think that the end game of what he was trying to find, if you put the Holy Grail with the Crystal Skull with Shia LaBeouf, no one would have said – no, I don't think anybody would have been as harsh on that movie as it was because of what it was. That's my thing, which lends me to believe what the hell are they going to find in the fifth one? Because what could you possibly put in – to make this interesting, because is it going to be, is he going to look for King Arthur's sword, Excalibur? Is he, you know, it has to be something that is known that people are intrigued about because it's a mystery that hasn't been solved. And it's one of those things that they're going to go on. That, so that's what I feel. I just don't know what they're going to
like
try
Atlantis
to find.
Or the Lost City of Gold, something like that.
Right. Something to the effect of, but it, where they're going to try to find something that everybody knows about, and that he's going to try to find, but it has to be some kind of historical kind of thing. But it has to be something where, because see, the other ones are Lost Ark, Holy Grail. Nazis get a hold of them, they're going to have unbelievable power, and they're going to win, so we had to stop them. Shakara Stones, you had some freaking madman that was trying to get these stones together, but you're like, yeah, but what's he going to do with these stones? Okay, who cares? I don't really care. Crystal Skull, okay, you got some Russian chick, and what was it, Claire Danes or Kate Blanchett? It's like, yeah, but if she gets them, really, really, what's going to happen? Okay, we didn't really know what's going to happen. But with the Holy Grail in the Lost Ark, you had an idea. If the Nazis get these, then because it says, the army that stands behind the Ark is invincible. And then the Holy Grail was immortal life. So those were the things that they were going for. So I don't know what they're going to do. But, again, I think enough's enough, and they should stop it. And they shouldn't do another one. They don't need another one. Another one's done.
Well, here's
the same thing with,
here's another question in the same vein. What about rebooting with a new actor playing the lead? And there were rumors going around for a while that Chris Pratt was going to do it, you know, from Guardians of the Galaxy.
You know, if you're going to do a total reboot of the series, then you're going to have to act like the first four never mattered. And can you do it and make it work? Well, they've done it with Batman. You know, they've done it with other things that have worked
in movies.
They've
done it with Bond.
You've done it with Bond. But the thing is, and now here's the other question, can you do it in a book? Could you literally do it, and let's just take James Patterson and Alex Cross. Could he legitimately reboot the series and say he's Alex Cross, but younger, and just start it all over again? Can you do it?
Well, that's what a prequel is, isn't it?
No, but I'm not talking about a prequel, almost. I'm talking about rebooting the series like what Star Wars kind of has done, said The Force Awakens. This is the new line we're going on. The rest of the Star Wars books don't mean anything because we're not going off any of those. They just are what they are, but this is the new thing. This is what we're going to do. Then we're going to do Rogue One, and we're going to tell those stories. And it's like, so they're forgetting the novels and all the other stuff that goes on. They're like, this is the way it's going to be.
Yeah, they kind of did that with Star Trek as well, recasting with Chris Pine and those folks, yeah. But they said
they forgot
an alternate
what
universe.
Was written. Yeah, they kind of forget. So the question is, again, when is enough enough? And when are you just doing it for a paycheck? Because, again, like I told Allison, there's a lot of authors, and I believe, and I'm going to say, I think 80% of the series that are over 5 and 6 books out there now, and 6 books is a good limit. I think once you hit 6, you're really pulling it out of 6. Because how many times can you write on the back of the book, this is the most diabolical villain they've ever faced, and oh my God, are they going to make it out alive? Yeah, they're going to make it out alive because they got a 3-book deal for the fucking thing. So stop writing that stupid crap on the back. Because, you know, and that's the other thing. When I read books like that and I see the main character in trouble, I don't even care because I'm like, well, I know he's going to get out of it, so what kind of stupid way are they going to make him out of it this way? Because he's not going to die, so why do you even put him in these freaking situations? Because it doesn't. I feel nothing for them. If I knew that the books were only going to be 7 books, like what Stephen James did with the Bowers series, I didn't know if Bowers was going to live in book 7. Because he could have killed him and said, yep, series over. I told you it was only 7 books. He's done. People thought Harry Potter was going to die.
Yeah.
He just didn't know. So I think, and I don't know if you agree with me, but I think 80% of the series that are over 6 books long are almost writing to make a paycheck, and they're not writing any more about the series and making it fun and fresh and whatnot. They're just rehashing the same old ideas that everybody's had, which is why I'm so sick of military and political thrillers. How many times can a terrorist group kidnap somebody, go after the president, blow up the earth, get a nuclear bomb? I really could care the hell less. In fact, I kind of wish they would get the nuclear bomb and blow up everything, and then your series is done. That would be my hop. I mean, I would love that. But what do you think?
I don't know if you watch the television series Sleepy Hollow, but for folks who do
I got done with it.
I was going to say, trying to keep it spoiler-free, but they did something that you don't expect them to do.
Which
and
what?
That was pretty amazing.
What'd they do?
They killed the main character.
Oh, they did?
Yes, they did.
No, so it was one of the 2 main characters, the guy or the girl? Or was it like the sister or the cop or somebody like that?
Well,
okay. Was it the main guy or the main girl?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Good. Well, good for them. See, and that's you know what that means? That means like, why is The Walking Dead? Why and 24? Why were they so intriguing? Well, first of all, 24 was intriguing because you knew it was only 24 episodes, and everybody was on the table to die. Every series, it was almost like Jack Bauer could die because he didn't sign on for the next one until after this one. So you didn't know if he was actually going to sign on, and they were going to maybe just kill him off. You know, they probably
you don't
want to
be friends with Jack Bauer, that's for sure.
Huh?
You never wanted to be friends with him because you always knew you'd end up on the slab.
Yeah, you always knew you might die. But everybody on the show, and they probably went 2 series too long. I mean, they probably could have stopped at like 5. I didn't care for the little 10 episode or whatever series that they did. I thought that was kind of stupid. I was like that again. To me, that was too much of it. There was too much. It was stupid. I didn't like it. I didn't think there was anything there because it was different formula and I didn't have the same kind of vibe with it.
There's only so many moral dilemma decisions that he has to make before it becomes.
Right.
Yeah, you've already done that one.
Right.
What did you think about the X-Files bringing back for a few episodes?
You know, okay, I'm going to get, and that's out of 5 stars, I'm going to give it 2.5. And I thought that the first episode was great, and I'm like, oh, shit, here they go. Episodes 2, 3, and 4, I was like, what the hell happened to episode 1?
Mm-hmm.
I was like, what the hell did you do? And then all of a sudden you bring it back in episode 6, you put 2 characters that are almost a little bit more exaggerated than Mulder and Scully. And it's like, okay, are you trying to reboot the X-Files with these 2 people? Is that what this whole six-episode thing was about, to see if fans were going to like these two people, and that was going to be the new, you know, Mulder and Scully? But then to end it the way that they ended it, and then to come back and say, well, sometimes, you know, when you answer questions, you just get more questions. And I'm like, fuck you, Christopher. You know what? You brought this sixth thing out. You should have done something to either end it or to make it where we know there's going to be another one. And then he comes out and says, well, we're gonna do more X-Files, but I have to do other stuff first. Well, you're a bastard. That was just cruel, I thought, to end it the way that they ended it. Because you know what they did? They really told you nothing. Everybody already knew there was extraterrestrial because the viewer already saw it. So you weren't showing the viewer anything more. You were trying to show the character something new. Is that what this whole thing was about when the thing came down at the end and was over Scully and Mulder might die and this and that? I didn't like it. That's why I gave it 2.5 stars, because I thought it started out very well. I thought it ended poorly. I thought it was a little cool to see him come back, but that's the only reason I gave it 2.5 stars. What about you?
I disagree with you in one sense, that I thought the best episode they did was one that was in the middle, and that was the one with the whole legend of that werebeast.
I think that some of those middle episodes were good. I just didn't see how the hell it tied into the first one when they started to get you back, like this was going to be a six-episode ending of stuff, and then they, like, forgot about it.
Yeah, the things that they did in that whole six-episode arc, if you're going in knowing, okay, I've got six episodes, I have people who've been wanting to see this for years, I made two extremely lousy movies in between.
There were two of them. They were both god-awful.
I was blown away by just the sheer, like, what the hell are you thinking aspect of it. It's like they didn't know what to do. And ending it the way they did, as you said, was just, I thought it was cop-out and a shame. If you're going to end it on a cliffhanger, end it on a point where it's like, holy cow, bring them back again. This is fantastic. I love it. Instead, it's like, eh.
Right.
And I love those characters.
End it where you ended it so questions were answered. And if you wanted to explore a little bit further, that's fine. But you don't need to understand what you were trying to get across. You know, you know what I mean? I think we're kind of saying the same thing.
Well, and they kept bringing up new elements that they never addressed beyond just bringing them up.
Right.
And that's just, without more episodes guaranteed, that's not good storytelling.
So were you looking at that when you were done, like, wow, they did this, they got everybody all hyped up for it, and they just wanted to cash a check?
I kind of felt that way. I feel like they started off really with a great intentions, but I don't think they were able to deliver it.
Well, you know, I'm going to let you know a little secret, because I was going to hold this back, but I was going to tell you only if I could get it confirmed. But I'm about 50% chance of being able to get Gillian Anderson on this show.
And I would love to talk to her.
Because
she
wrote a book with somebody.
With that other guy.
Yes. Yeah. And so I was going to get her with the book angle, but of course we're going to bring up the X-Files and, of course, how all that kind of helped. But I'm trying to get her on the show. She's filming now, and I'm trying to hopefully, will she still talk about her book after she's kind of done filming and she has a little bit of break? Will she be interested in maybe still talking about her book? So if she does, she's going to be on this show. Or if she's not going to be on this show, I guess some other time.
Right now.
It'll be the two of us talking to her. Let's put it that way.
Okay, that'd be awesome. I'd love that.
Yeah. But if we go to the book angle, do you agree that 80% of the series out there are too long?
Yeah, actually, I would agree with that. I think that if you really like a character, you want to see him doing things, after a while, they're kind of doing the same things, and especially with the military stuff, with a couple exceptions. But,
oh, God.
Yeah.
Who are the exceptions?
Well, I was going to say one of them's now passed away, Vince Flynn. I always felt that
he was great, wasn't he? And that's
he
another
was,
thing.
And,
well, okay, so
yes.
So hold on, so real quick, because we have to, because we're going to run out of time here, real quick. But this is real good. He's dead. He died. And I love Grant Blackwood, and I love Mark Greene, and Tom Clancy's dead. Shouldn't the series end with when the main author dies?
I would say if they
had a book.
I love
that your son doing it, like a J.R.R. Tolkien, and it's a family member doing it.
Well, like Cussler's son doing the Dirk Pitt books, which
everybody else is like Cussler nowadays.
I would argue that that should have ended a couple books ago easily, too, even though I'm,
sure.
you know, a huge Cussler fan. But
yeah,
we're going to have a lot of authors angry at us now after this. So thank you very much.
No, because it's not about being angry, because we're not really saying. We're just trying to say, and I almost think that out of 80% of those authors, I think 100% of them would rather be done. The problem is like Allison said, it's tough to sell a standalone. It's easier to sell a series. And if the publisher is going to do that, they're going to want to have you write the series. And if you want to eat and you want to keep going, you're going to almost have to be a slave to what they do until maybe you get to a point when you can finally say, F you, I'm going to do what I want to do.
Yeah. I would agree with that.
Yeah, because you talked to a lot of authors, and I think that there was one major author that wanted to kill off his character and was almost probably, and I think they literally had death threats to do it, and the publisher said, that ain't going to happen. And so it was like they want to be done with it. They want to be done, and they can't. It's like they're almost a handcuffed of their own success.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And
yeah.
I think, though, a lot of readers don't pay attention to anything beyond the fact that, oh, I know this character, I'm just going to pick up this book.
Yeah.
Oh, Clancy's been dead for years. Well, no, this is a new Clancy book. So
well,
he must have had
it. If people heard our Mark Greene interview, some people don't even know Clancy died. They think Mark is Clancy. So.
Exactly.
You know, and I think, and again, I think it's great exposure for Grant Blackwood. I think it's great exposure for Mark Greene, and I don't blame them at all for taking that assignment, because I would freaking take that assignment if I was given to me. I just think it's in poor taste for the publisher and for the family and the estate. I think they should say, I'm sorry, Tom's died, Vince has died, it's over. The series is done. Because by saying it's Tom Clancy and then in small letters putting Grant Blackwood or Mark Greene on it, I think is a disservice, because it's their book. And you're just putting Tom Clancy on it because you want to make the money. But Mark and Grant wrote the books. You know, whoever's going to write Vince is writing the books. Whoever's under that name of Clive Cussler, they're the ones that wrote the book. All right? But you're putting
the big name
to sell the book.
You can make the argument that having the brand that sells has it so it's able for the authors who are not brands to get bought by those publishers.
True. But as you know, and we're friends with someone who writes like that, it hasn't done shit for their other career. That's true.
Exactly.
And we're not going to say who, and we're not going to give any hints, because this is the X-Files, and we are running out of time. So we're going to end you right here on that cliffhanger, because we do have inside information that we're not going to say. We just don't have time, and we're not going to tell you about. But Jeff, next Monday, it's going to be great.
Yes, next
we're gonna
Monday,
have
and we will have our.
And,
yes, it's going to be great.
What was that? Yeah,
it's going to be great. And then when we go back to our regular schedule on May 2nd, we are going to do the debate between Star Trek and Star Wars.
Star Wars. And let the games begin, because the Force will be with me. And I'm your Klingon, baby. I'm your Klingon.
Yeah, no one's going to go to the dark side after listening to this. But what I do recommend is that you and I stay out of it and let them talk. We'll discuss that further.
Maybe for the first half hour, but second half hour, I can't shut up for that long. All right, Jeff, you have a good one. Until next time, everybody, remember, get us on iTunes, subscribe, keep reading. Talk to you next time. Goodbye.
Goodbye.